Hey beautiful souls.
It's Natasha
and Christina,
and this is Mammology. We are two moms and best friends who birthed this pod baby to blow the lid off of the motherhood experience and rid mamas everywhere of that lonely, am I the only one feeling this way?
Join us every Wednesday in a new episode where we have candid conversations around motherhood, wellness, and so much more. We discuss hot topics, introduce you to awesome guests, and always sip a new drink to review and rate at the end of the show. Whether you want to laugh, cry, or take a time out for yourself,
we got you, boo.
You know what's so funny?
Tell me.
As we said from the beginning of this podcast that we would not talk politics.
That was rule numero uno.
It was literally, I remember typing it out to our group chat saying that I will not budge on talking about anything political, where we stand, none of that.
So what happened, Christina?
Well, we invited a politician on.
How'd that happen? What made you budge?
I don't know. I didn't even flinch.
No, you're like, sure.
You're literally like, we should have her on. And I was like, I checked her out. I'm like, abs-freaking-lutely.
Let's have politics? Her on. I'm down.
Yeah. So we broke
rule number one.
I know. Not only do we talk about politics, but we had one on. And I don't regret it.
No.
Not a second. But like, just for like a little disclaimer, I'm still staying my ground where I don't like talk about, speak about like which party we vote for. And like, that's not what our platform focuses on. I think we could both agree on that. Like, it doesn't focus on that. I think what Mammology does focus on is inspiring moms and women through stories and through knowledge. And I think that she's an amazing example of a woman and a mother who hustles and inspires. So why would we not have her on?
She'd
be
like,
a disservice.
Yeah, she's like the very definition of the Mother Hustler series. Mm-hmm. All of our guests that fall under that series have been that. And you know what's funny? Mom and dad. I'm finally using my political degree that you sent me to university for. I knew it would come in handy one day.
Look at you, cutie.
Uh-huh.
See that?
I'm in politics, baby. But like every episode, I say this almost every time. I'm like, it was a serious topic, but we laughed a lot.
Yeah. That's how we roll.
We're just happy people, maybe?
I think so. Even on our shittiest of days.
So tonight, Christina and I are entering the politics arena with our MPP for Parkdale and Hyde Park, Boutella Carpoche. Because, in case you haven't noticed, motherhood is political. It's actually probably the most political occupation one can have.
Agreed.
You agree?
I do.
I'm glad you said that.
I'm glad you said that.
Thanks. More than anyone, mothers across the globe are invested in the future. We give birth to and raise the future.
Put that on your resume. Right?
Can I?
If someone said anything negative about me putting that on my resume, I'd be like, I don't want to work for you.
I'm raising the future. Without knowing it, when you step over the threshold of motherhood, little do you realize how much politics will govern your life. For issues that directly affect mothers, such as something as simple as your neighborhood architecture not being accessible to strollers, can I get an amen?
Or wheelchairs.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Don't you remember that feeling? When you're a new mom and then you had to take the TTC somewhere, or you had to go somewhere to a doctor's appointment or somewhere, and then you're like, I'm stuck here. I literally can't get to the street from where I am because all the elevators are out of service.
Like, frankly, I won't get off at my stop at Kiel, and I'll go one stop over where I know there's an elevator.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather do that than take a bus home.
Exactly. And that's just because we have a stroller. So imagine someone who like legit can't go anywhere else.
Yeah, so that's politics in itself. Mm-hmm. And then there's the parental leave policies. Mm-hmm. Don't get me started on that. Yeah. Child care, maternal perspectives, they're all so important, so overlooked. And I think we both can agree that until we became mothers, that's when we started paying more attention to it.
Yeah.
Which is sad, but.
And I think it's also like fighting for our kids, right? Because mm-hmm. like what we do now is, I feel like it's more impactful to our children's lives than ours.
Yes. So in a world that claims to adore mothers and often says that we're doing the most important job in the world, why is it then that the effectiveness of being a mother doesn't translate over to political policies? Being a mother has given us a greater stake in the future of this country. And motherhood is about your journey and your personal experiences, but it extends far beyond the reaches of our home. Motherhood is global. It connects us and it's political. And that is so very much the reason why we are so excited for this episode and for you guys to hear it.
So before we get into this conversation with Butella, we want to introduce a drink, which is Borel Botanical, and it is a brewed botanical tonic drink, non-alcoholic, not tonight. And I am drinking, I don't know how to pronounce it, Rishi?
Yeah.
Rishi, which is, and elderberry and birch. And it says relaxed on it. And let me tell you something. I've been sipping for a couple sips and look at me.
So relaxed.
If you've noticed, I keep slouging. I've been like going.
Slouging? Did you just make up a new word? That's how relaxed you are?
I'm so relaxed.
You've given up on
I'm almost lying down.
So my flavor is lion's mane and it says that it's supposed to make me focused and I am.
Are you? Okay, so that's what we're drinking today. And at the end of the episode, we will give you our final review and rating as usual. Should we get into this?
Please, the people need to hear this.
Put on your blazers, ladies. We're going in.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening. We are so excited. We've been anticipating this conversation for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah. So we know who you are, but can you tell our listeners essentially what your background story is, where you're from, and how you got to be this amazing mama politician?
Sure. My name is Butella Carpoche, and I am the mama of two beautiful children, a boy and a girl. My older is my daughter, and then my boy is my little one. And I am also the member of provincial parliament for Parkdale Hyde Park in Toronto, Ontario. And, you know, before I ran for public office, I was already a mom because I had my daughter then. And my experiences of being a new mom were something that stayed with me deeply, even as my child grew older. And while in public office, I had my second child, and I knew a little bit more in terms of what I was doing, but I constantly was brought back to the feelings of being a new mom again. And this time around, given that I had this huge platform of being an elected representative, of being a member of provincial parliament, I decided to use the platform to talk about issues that are important to women, to mothers, like maternal mental health and what the experiences are like for women and moms during the pandemic. So really just bringing that voice, which is me as a mom, as a parent, as a woman, and, you know, which is the experience of a lot of people across Ontario.
Definitely. Wow.
That's great.
So, I mean, the title of this episode is actually Motherhood is Political. Yeah. And, you know, family is often the first social institution to shape how we really understand our identity in politics. What would it mean to acknowledge that motherhood is a political concept? Because I feel like a lot of people don't think that way about motherhood.
Yeah. In fact, one of the things that I have always said, and I said this even before I was elected into public office, when I was a community organizer and activist, the personal is political. We cannot separate the two, right? If you really think about everything that goes on in our personal lives, from the moment we wake up in the morning, right? If you have children, the fact that your children can go to public schools, that we have a public education system. If you go to work, what are the conditions working conditions like at your place of employment, how much you make, what kind of housing do you live in, do you own, do you rent? Everything in our lives is a direct decision that is made by governments, policy decisions, which are political as well, and they impact our day-to-day life. And motherhood is no different. Mm-hmm. Everything that we experience as mothers is political. You know, I think one of the first things that comes to mind probably for most people is when you become a mother, maybe, you know, it's maternity leave, right? People think, oh, maternity leave is a benefit. But guess what? It didn't always used to be that way, right? It had to be fought for. And not everybody still gets the benefit of maternity leave. Like if you are self-employed, right? What are the loopholes that exist that disqualify you from being able to spend the most important times as a new parent, as a new mom with your newborn child? So all of these decisions are very much political. And, you know, for me as an elected representative, one of the things that I came to find out was that there is no official policy for new moms in the legislature. You kind of have to just figure it out yourself. How much you work, when you come back, how much time you want to take off, all of that is left up to you. And that puts a lot of pressure on one person, right? Because you're not only managing your work life, but then you're also trying to manage expectations. Because people still, you don't stop becoming the member of provincial parliament for Parkdale Highbury. There's no replacement, right? Because it's not like you can have an election to have a replacement. So when you don't have those policy and political frameworks in place, then it has a huge impact in your life. So motherhood from, you know, in all ways, it's political. And I also want to just touch very briefly on just the fact of giving birth, right? We are obviously in Canada, so we have a public healthcare system, thankfully. But so much of the services that we need are not necessarily, again, covered. I had to go to a chiropractor because I had massive back pains. I had sciatic issues. And I think a lot of moms could declare, familiarize or know what I'm talking about. But at the same time, and within the healthcare system, right? Like we know that if you are a woman who is Black, then the chances of the quality of service is lower. Right? The chances that you might have a complication is higher. The chances that you might have a child mortality is higher if you are Black. Similarly, if you're Indigenous, the rates are even higher. The risks are even higher. All of these are directly linked to the politics and the policies that are in place. So absolutely, motherhood is political. The personal is always political.
Yeah, you just touched on so many things that we'd be nodding very heavily in agreement for everyone who can't see. But yeah, like motherhood is healthcare.
Yeah.
Motherhood is the impact of racism. Just, you know, you worry for your children if they're going to get stopped by the police or if you're planning to give birth and you know that you're not going to have what you said, the ample support in the healthcare system and motherhood's economy. It's so many different things. So
you never think of this before.
No.
Because I remember like even just being in high school or college, like it, for me, it was so, it was such a distant thought, anything mm-hmm. to do with politics. I'm like, that doesn't involve me. Mm-hmm. And then you become an adult and you're like, oh, wow, there's a lot that I can contribute to for my family's life.
The way that you even choose the neighborhood because you want the best schools for your children. So
Natasha's the one that found you and wanted to have you on. And so I did a little bit of creeping and I was just like instantly obsessed with you, especially when I saw the video of you with your second baby. The interview of soothing your child while you're like making this extremely powerful speech, mm-hmm. it just like really hit me and I was just like, wow. And I just wanted to know, like, what were your thoughts leading up to that speech? Mm-hmm. And what were your thoughts during it?
Yeah, so much. Well, I knew I wanted to touch and speak to the issue of maternal mental health. You know, it is an issue that is overlooked. It is an issue that, particularly in the halls of power in the legislature, which is such a male-dominated area and place, I wanted to talk about issues that impact us, women, mothers, right? So I knew I wanted to do this. Of course, the logistics of all of it, you know, I was like, initially, my plan was just to go into the House and do my statement and speak to the issue. But like all parents, I was struggling with, you know, sort of the nursing situation with my little boy. He was not a bottle boy. Like, I could not be anywhere for more than 2 hours away from him, because then he'll just go hungry. And there was no, you know, I mean, we tried so many different things. He never took the soother. He never took the bottle. It was always me. I was like, I don't know how long I'm going to get stuck. I have to take him with me, right? And obviously, this was pre-COVID. So I had my mother-in-law at that time come with me just in case. So, you know, it was quite funny because I was going already to Queen's Park quite often with him. And at some point I thought to myself, should I just, you know, bring in a crib to my office? So anyway, so I knew I was going to take him. And then I thought to myself, okay, well, you know, what if I just take him to the chamber? Because one of the things is that my child, and because of, you know, my position as an MPP and, you know, this whole maternity leave situation not really being clear in terms of what I'm supposed to do, and me already being at work, I was bringing my child to work, you know? So whether I'm in within the chambers or whether, you know, my baby is in the office, which is one floor in a different floor, like, I'm still bringing my child to work.
Yeah.
It's not possible if you're doing so many different kinds of work. Like, if you know, I mean, thankfully, most people qualify for maternity leave, but like, just imagine if you're working in a warehouse or if you're working somewhere, there's no way you can bring your child. I mean, luckily I work in an environment where, you know, it's more like office situation and my, you know, nobody can really tell me to not bring my child, right? So I figured, you know, it can shine a light on that as well. Why so many women, particularly, you know, women who are thinking of starting families, you know, so younger maybe, don't want to get into politics. It's because we're faced with that choice, right? Do I focus in my career and do that? Or do I want to start a family? Because the job is extremely demanding. And oftentimes it feels like you're not paying attention enough attention to one, right? I certainly had many, many of those moments. So I thought, okay, you know what? I'm going to take him in. And leading up to it, I'm like, gosh, there's so much I wanted to say. I mean, there's so much we can talk about, right? On this issue, particularly, even if I narrowed it down just to mental health, like maternal mental health, there's so much I can do. I can talk about. And our statements are only 90 seconds long. So how do I package so much information into 90 seconds? That was a huge challenge. So I had to be very, very deliberate in what I selected, right? And so, you know, I crafted a statement. I shared it with a couple of friends who are also mothers who, you know, just to make sure that it was resonating, which it did. It came back with everyone's like, hell yes, that's exactly. But of course, it was too long, so I had to shorten it. But even as I was writing it, you know, I was really trying to just not like trying to. It was not very surgical. It was very much more emotional, my writing. So I just sort of let it out, right? And I knew that I was going to get emotional when I spoke. And I did get emotional. I mean, I held it until the end, but towards the end, I was almost crying. I knew I was going to be emotional. So I just really needed to know what I was going to say, because 90 seconds, there's no room for mistake, right? Okay, wow. So a lot of preparation went into that. And, you know, when I got there, I think that I just sort of let it out. And I focused on really the core, I think, the core part of the challenge that we feel is we feel like we're doing so much of this alone, right? Like we feel like it's not everybody, particularly those around us, you know, like our partners, our husbands, our family members who might be there to support us, truly understand how we might be feeling and how isolating that experience will be or is. And the judgment, right? My gosh, when I was a first-time mom, I made the big mistake because I thought it was like, you know, I was being resourceful. I joined like a whole bunch of like mommy groups and Facebook groups, right, where we could share parenting tips and stuff like that. And I constantly felt like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I was not good enough. Everybody seemed to have figured it out. And, you know, why is my child not gaining weight? And why is this, you know, why am I having trouble feeding? Why is my child a picky? Oh my gosh, so many questions. You doubt yourself every time. And worse, you feel like every decision you make is going to scar your child for life. Right? So much pressure. And so I just wanted to share that, you know, that feeling that there's so much judgment. And yet we say it takes a village to raise a child and we feel like we're doing it all by ourselves.
Exactly. So, yeah,
that's how the statement came about. And, you know, I expected people to know what I was talking about, especially as women and as moms. But I was just blown away by the response to the statement. I mean, the next day it was already going viral and, you know, so many messages, even, you know, obviously through Facebook comments and direct messages, but also emails to our offices. It was just so overwhelming. And that response led me to think, holy smokes, like, I can't stop here. And yeah. It's not a statement and that's it. I need to do something more. I need to do something that's a concrete action. And that led me to my bill.
Wow. Yeah. What a good reason to go viral too. An important message to put across. So for those who know, we obviously know what the maternal mental health bill was, but could you just elaborate a little bit more on that?
Sure. So the maternal mental health bill really had two parts. The first part is to recognize the day. So many jurisdictions across the world, and even internationally, the World Health Organization, they have a specific day that's dedicated to recognizing and building awareness on maternal mental health. But not in Ontario. Like, why? Yeah. So as a first step, you know, we have a day, we recognize it. And it's important to have a day because once it's officially adopted by the government as a day, then every year it's incumbent on the government to recognize it. We talk about it. We talk about issues related to the day, right? So that awareness building, that conversation, which needs to happen all the time to make sure that it's ongoing, something like having a day that's officially recognized as Maternal Mental Health Day is really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. But we know acknowledgements alone aren't enough, right? And in fact, nowadays, more and more, we tend to slip into doing only the acknowledgement part without the concrete action piece, right. Which is why the second part of my bill, you know, basically required, if the bill passed, for the government to conduct a review of the state of maternal mental health in Ontario. Now, I have, of course, great, you know, I think great ideas in terms of what we can do to improve maternal mental health in Ontario, but I didn't want to be super prescriptive, you know, in my bill to say, do action XYZ in order to improve maternal mental health. I wanted there to be a review so we can fully get the scope, you know, the width and the breadth and the depth of the issue and really have an opportunity for moms, for health practitioners, for everybody related to maternal health. So it can be, you know, nurses, it can be doulas, it can be moms, it can be childcare providers, the whole spectrum, to give feedback to the government to really explain from the different perspectives how it impacts maternal mental health, and then come up with an action plan, right? So you have experts, frontline workers, and people who actually have lived the experience. And in that way, I'm not pushing something that I think, but rather what the public, what the people want to see. And which is precisely what surprised me when the government actually voted the bill down, because I was not being prescriptive at all. I was not, you know, it was so open. Like, who knows what the review is going to show, right? And conducting a review, which is just really collecting information and creating a strategy, isn't a huge commitment in terms of action, right? But I was very, very sad to see the government not support it.
No, us too. I had a girlfriend actually send me on Instagram a notice saying that our government had turned it down, because she was equally let down, because it just seems like such an obvious thing to set in motion. Mm-hmm. The fact that the conservatives just shut it down so fast just seemed really disheartening. Mm-hmm. And so, in saying that, how can anyone who's listening really help improve the mental health initiative for mothers in Ontario? Like, what can we do to maybe push it forward in the future?
Yeah. So, as I was telling a lot of people who reached out to me, just because the bill was voted down doesn't mean that this is the end, right? We can still do a lot more. Now, my strategy in terms of doing is, now that I know where the government stands on the issue, my strategy also is going to change. So what I did on World Maternal Mental Health Day is I tabled a motion in the House for the government to recognize just the day. I didn't, you know, the motion didn't have the second piece, which has the review. So I said, okay, you at least recognize the day, like literally, it's the least you could do, right? We recognize days for everything.
There's a day for pizza.
I know. So basically, the strategy is to separate the two and then at least have the first part recognized. And when we have that, and when it becomes an annual day, then we are able to take that next step, right? To talk about, okay, we talk about this day. Now, what do we need to do? I mean, we can't just keep talking. And in terms of what individuals can do on this issue, particularly if they really do want to see government take action on the issue, I would suggest to contact your local NPP, particularly if they are conservative, you know, so they're part of the government side, and let them know why it's important that the government take maternal mental health seriously. So, you know, I mean, I think all of the representatives in Mississauga are conservative MPPs. So I would encourage you, you know, I mean, and you can contact them, you know, you can do it in so many different ways. You can send them an email, you can ask for a meeting, you can have a phone conversation, but basically you need to put it in their radar, right? Yeah. And if they have it in their radar, and if their constituents are asking them to do something about it, at the very least, even if they don't take proactive action on it, at the very least, they're going to think twice before they vote against it. And hopefully the work will be done between now and the next time it comes up for a vote that enthusiastically supported.
I say when the day comes up, we all go downtown to Queen's Park, we breastfeed our children. Yeah. On the other hand, we hold picket signs and make them hear us.
Yeah. I'm always down for public breastfeeding. Okay. You know, just a stamina. Every time I see someone breastfeeding in public, I want to like wink at them and be like, I see you, but then I don't want to look weird at the same time. So,
yeah. You know, actually, I got that as a suggestion as well after the statement. There were some moms who reached out and were like, oh, you know, it would have been so great if you just like took your boob out and you started nursing him.
It would have really went viral.
Yeah. That's amazing. So that answers, we had a follower, she asked Julia. She wanted to know more about that. Kind of on the same topic with emailing your MPPs. So apparently my mom has been emailing ours in Mississauga, and it's not going very far. So what are your thoughts on COVID regulations surrounding people in community living, like special needs individuals? I don't know great detail about it, but I do know it's government run and that they do get funding from the Ministry of Social Services. So just like on a more personal level, my brother has special needs, and so he's very high functioning. He's in his mid-20s and he lives in a residential community living home. So he's like two blocks away from my mom. And since COVID started, he's essentially been, this is from my own personal feelings, he's been essentially kind of stripped of his human rights. We are all, you know, lockdown goes off and it goes on, and but we've all been able to come together as a family or go shopping to the mall or do different things. You know, and he's been at home this entire year, essentially completely locked down, watching it all on social media. And his mental health has definitely been stripped. He's been feeling very much like he's different from everybody else. And my mom has been trying to fight for having the right to take him to Christmas or take him to his own birthday party or stuff like that. And it's been essentially all we're allowed to do is go at the end of his driveway, and he sits at the other end of his driveway. They say, well, you know, there's three other adults living in the home who also have special needs, so you have to be considerate, obviously, of their safety. But there's 20 different workers working in that home, going in and out, going back to their family, doing whatever they want to do, and then coming back in the house, back and forth. So it's been really hard on our family, and we're not getting like a lot. We're not getting anything essentially from the Mississauga MPP. So I just wanted to know like your thoughts as a mother and, you know, someone in your position, what are your thoughts around that?
I'm sure it's happening in Toronto too.
I know. I think it's the same.
And actually, I met with the director at Community Living Toronto, and I have met with families who have children in community living centers or group homes, you know, and so there's quite a lot. So I'll kind of take it step at a time. Yeah. The first thing is, let's start, say, with vaccination, okay? We had been urging from the very beginning that we need to ensure that those with any kind of disability, those with, you know, and whether it's developmental disability, whether it's, you know, like a physical disability, anything that makes somebody vulnerable, right, they need to be prioritized. And particularly, we were saying that those who have developmental disabilities who are in a congregate setting, right, they need to be, you know, I mean, like we knew from the very beginning, congregate setting was not, was one of the reasons that promoted the spread of infections of COVID, right? So when we know that folks have developmental disability, when we know that they are in a group setting, then, and usually those with developmental disabilities, they're not necessarily able to follow the public health measures of social distancing, constantly wearing masks, things like that. There are certain restrictions, right? So what we had said from the very beginning is prioritize vaccination. Get them their first dose, prioritize them for the second dose. So at least for their health, And in terms of the ability to be able to do different things, they were protected, right? Second, like similar to long-term care homes and others, in a lot of these centers, the support workers, they call it DSWs, right? Development support workers. But there are support workers who come in to provide services. And like in long-term care with PSWs, a lot of these workers work part-time jobs. They stitch up multiple part-time jobs to be able to have, you know, a full-time job. And that means they're working in more than one center. And we know that that was one of the ways that transmission was happening, right? If they got sick, many of them didn't have paid sick days. So again, they're being forced to make that choice. Do I go into work sick or do I lose pay? Which is why paid sick days campaign was huge. It was so, there was so much pressure on the government to act on paid sick days because everybody knew when you're sick, you should be staying home, not going out to work because that's just going to spread. So giving the workers 18 days and ensuring that they worked just in one location as opposed to multiple locations. And thankfully for DSWs like PSWs, they got some pandemic pay, which helped them to be able to stay in one as opposed to have multiple. So that is the other thing. And then similar again to long-term care, again, I keep coming back to this because the congregate situation, the, you know, it has a lot of similarities. What we have been saying is families are essential caregivers, you know, and which is why my colleague, the NDP MPP, Lisa Gretzky, she put forward a new piece of legislation called the Essential Caregiver Act, right, to say that you cannot basically put a person into a, you cannot leave them pretty much indoors all year with no support and no connection with their family. They have to have that connection. And as an essential caregiver, family should be allowed to visit. Family should be able to, you know, connect and provide services. And that doesn't mean necessarily the same services that a support worker might be coming in to provide. It could be that human connection, that social connection, the mental health need, right, that a person needs. And so we have to be very, very cognizant that when we talk about health, it's not just physical health. It's not, you know, it's also emotional health. It's also mental health. And so really we need to be able to provide all of that to the person, particularly because there are so many people who are basically vulnerable in one way or the other, right? Due to different circumstances. So like through the worker angle, through the own, the individual person's health through vaccination, through the family connection, there are so many different things, all of the ways the government can take action to keep people safe and keep people healthy and happy, right? I feel like we talk about healthy, but how about happy? Happy is good. Happy is important.
So important. Yeah. And that's why it's been so difficult on our family, because I think about, like, I have my job, I have my child, I have my husband, I get to see my mom, I get to see my dad, we get to go, you know, for walks with family. And then just knowing that my brother is just sitting in his room, just watching like movie after movie and going for like a walk with a random worker who's just taking him for a walk. Yeah. It's just, and he's so high functioning. Like, he understands everything. He's like, I get it. I'm different. Like, but he follows all the rules. Like, I almost feel like it should be like, if a parent is fighting for their child, saying like, my son is following the rules way more than a lot of other people. And he's been telling me like, why am I here? Like, why am I alive? Yeah. Like, I'm just sitting here. Like, no one cares other than my family. But it's just like, it's so crazy to feel like a parent, but you have no control over your own child. Like, I can't imagine not seeing my son. So it's just, it's hard, right? It's hard on so many people during COVID.
Your story, I think, it's so heartbreaking, but it's also so important to like speak about on our podcast and just in any conversation that you can within in public, because I mean, in recent months, there has been an increase of like coverage of the particular toll that the pandemic has taken on mothers or primary caregivers. Mm-hmm. Like your mom today, she was talking about your brother. Mm-hmm. And so the pandemic has like highlighted many challenges for mothers, but they're not necessarily new, right?
Yeah.
So because we always like to circle back to the positive here on mammology, we're just curious to know what your thoughts are and how the pandemic can be used as a political mobilization or optimism for moms like Christina, or even the sisters of, you know, people who are in these homes. Like, how can this pandemic bring some optimism out of the situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I would say, especially for our women and for moms, like for so long, and it doesn't really matter like which part of the country you're from or whatever, like we just know as women, as moms, we do the bulk of the caregiving work, right? I mean, and that for some reason in our society is not considered work. It's just something that we have to take the burden on, right? I mean, even just for, you know, scheduling this podcast, I had to think, okay, you know, okay, online school is done, you know, it's around dinner time, who's going to feed? Like, I'm doing all that mental work in my head to plan, you know, and it's exhausting and it is work. Like, you know, I have to come from work and then start my new work at home or the second part of my work. So anyways, the caregiving work, which is like a full-time job, is such a huge burden mentally and even physically, has never been recognized as work. But now when we are, and because of the pandemic, you know, when we've been at home and sort of that, it kind of forced us all to recognize that, hey, you know what? Women have to do their jobs and have to take care of the family at the same time. And I don't think, and we were always doing that, but it never came up as a thing, or at least was recognized that we were doing it. But the pandemic kind of forced everybody to recognize that we were doing it. And so I think the positive side is that as an issue has really come to the forefront. People now at least understand that without things like childcare, without things like, you know, support for families and women, you cannot have an economy. There's no recovery without those key pieces. And how integral women are to the economy, because we do this bulk of caregiving work for free. Right? It is. We are doing it. And I think that maybe also another positive thing that has come from this pandemic is that we've been able to see how communities can really band together, you know? And I think that, I mean, I don't know, you know, what it was like in your neighborhoods, but in Parkdale High Park, for example, we had so many different mutual aid groups, right? Like neighbors helping neighbor groups come up. And it was very quickly done. It was really just people offering each other help, support, whether it was groceries or whether it was sharing internet access. You know, if you were a neighbor and you know, because we all needed internet to be able to do a lot of the stuff, especially early on when we had the complete shutdown. So it's just really like people stepping up, right, to help their neighbors, sometimes strangers. And I think that when we faced such like this unprecedented crisis, we were able to see that people were willing to step up for people they didn't know. And we were showing that we cared for each other, right? And that humanity, I think, was really good to see. It wasn't like elbows out. I mean, as time progressed, I think people were getting more frustrated. So things might have changed a little bit, but at least in the very beginning, really it was just regular folk reaching out to each other, making sure they were all okay. You know, that taking care of each other aspect, I thought was really good to see.
Yeah. I feel like it's done a lot of good with the big corporate world. So I work full time at a bank, and I feel like it's kind of changed the mentality of work-life balance. So like we're all on our Zoom calls having meetings, and there's kids running behind us in their diaper, there's chairs being thrown, and that would have never been okay pre-COVID. And I think now everybody's understanding that we have a family, and it's right. much more normalized now. Right. I have VPs, dads actually on call, and they're making a speech and they have two toddlers running behind them and they're not even phased, which reminds me of, who was that? It went viral. That news anchor was at home.
Yes.
This
yes.
was pre-COVID. Oh, it was yeah. like a big thing, right? Oh, yeah. man. He was so embarrassed. Now I feel like it's not so much a bad thing.
Yeah.
So I also feel like it made people come back and realized how much time they were spending away from their family. Mm-hmm. Because pre-COVID, now that I'm working from home, I would have commuted downtown Toronto, commuted back, picked up my son from daycare, made a quick dinner for him, put him to bed, and that's my time spent yeah. with him, which just is mind-blowing to me. So I think and I hope that COVID has kind of made companies realize that how important family is and having that work-life balance as well. And I'm seeing a lot of like tech companies making workspaces more flexible. So mm-hmm. I think that's been a good positive anyways from COVID.
Yeah. And just going back on what you said earlier about the Essential Health Giver Act.
Mm-hmm. It's actually, now I remember the proper full title. It's called More Than a Visitor Act.
Okay.
More Than a Visitor.
Yeah. I think that's something that you and your mom should look into. Mm-hmm. Okay. That was stemmed from the pandemic?
Yes.
That's a good thing.
Response.
She's like, I birthed him. I'd hope so.
I'm literally just trying to like pick any morsel of goodness that has come from this past year and a half. So we'll look into that. Yeah. Write some letters.
Yes.
Okay. That's a good piece of advice. We find that you're so inspiring, and I'm sure there's a lot of girls and young women here listening, hopefully. I hope mm-hmm. they're listening.
Of course.
That also find you inspiring. For anyone that's looking to get into politics, like what advice would you give the next generation of female leaders? Because, oh God, please, we need more. We need more in office just to shed light on all these important topics that you've been doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We definitely need more women in politics. Young women in politics, really from all walks of life, right? because, like I said, the legislature of Ontario, and if you, I'll take it one step further and say, if you look at the cabinet, okay, if anybody listening, go home tonight, or not go home, you're already home, I guess it's COVID, but go on your computer or your phone and Google Ontario cabinet, you know, and just take a look at what the cabinet looks like and ask yourself, is that Ontario? Does that reflect the people of Ontario?
Yeah. And
spoiler alert, absolutely not. You know, so if we don't have even our legislature, our cabinet, where the most important decisions are happening that are impacting millions of people, right? If this group that is making these decisions come from a very tiny percentage of the population, they have absolutely no idea, no perspective, no voice at the table that can share what the hell is happening the rest of the province, right? And I think, you know, it's part of the reason why so many of the decisions are misguided, you know. And I always, like, it was so funny because, like, I asked a question to the minister yesterday about these virtual hearings that were happening at the Landlord and Tenant Board. And I said, I'd like to ask the minister, like, have you witnessed these hearings? Like, you know, we can, when you ask a minister or, like, anybody in position power, even the premier, right? Do you know what it's like on the ground? almost always they don't, mm-hmm. you know? And that is, there's such a disconnect between the people who have the power that make the decisions yeah. and the reality. And I think that at the very least, if we have women, young women in politics, then we can bring forward the issues that are important to us, right? And of course, you know, there's usually a little bit of doubt or hesitancy where people might feel like, should I run? Am I qualified? Oh my gosh, that question comes up so many times. Am I qualified? Like, yes, you are qualified. Do you know how to use a computer? Okay, you're qualified.
Imposter syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, it's quite funny, but sometimes all you need to do is really just pay attention to what somebody in power is saying and see if it makes sense to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that in itself will tell you that you probably know way more about how things work mm-hmm. on the ground in people's lives and would know where the gaps are and what exactly needs to be done in order to fix it. Right. And so any kind of doubt, any kind of thing, it's really just, I mean, it's completely natural to have it. Absolutely. But for anybody listening, you know, just do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are probably overqualified, but do it, do it. And I think that, you know, even for me, for example, so before I ran for office, I was doing my PhD, right? And I asked myself like, oh, would it be better if I actually had like that PhD already completed, you know, and like attached to my name? Would that give maybe lend more, I don't know, like credibility?
Yeah.
Would people take me more seriously then? You know, like I had to ask myself that. And I realized like, my gosh, you know, this is what I keep hearing from other women who are in politics is that, you know, it's just really postponing your stuff, but you don't need those additional degrees and stuff like that attached to your name. You probably already know so much more, right? Like these are the kinds of advice. And I had to remind myself, like, it's okay. I don't need that.
Right.
Yeah. Degree
attached to my name. Yeah. To be taken seriously or anything like that. But it's also because as women, you know, we do face sexism and we do face these kinds of discrimination, right? Which is why we tend to question ourselves.
We always yeah. feel like we have to like prove ourselves so much more than we need to.
Am I enough? Like I need a PhD in order to run for yeah. office just so someone in the cabinet will take me seriously.
And then when you dock on being a mom, then it's the extra amount of like the motherhood penalty. It's just like, just keeps hitting us.
Yeah.
But we power through. Power
and,
through.
And that's why. So everyone listening, Google what the cabinet looks like. And then you'll get a realization why the Maternal Mental Health Act yeah. was turned down and why we need more women running. So world menstrual health, hygiene, and all that, you know,
yeah.
stuff that affects us women is talked about and not yeah. like taboo.
I think that's why it's so important to have someone like you
yeah.
speaking for us, right? Like I especially loved the one video of you. It honestly just looked like you were just your average citizen walking on Hyde Park, coming in and just speaking your mind because it felt like you were speaking for everybody, but also yourself when you were talking about how it's being handled with the closures of daycares and schools and how they keep surprising us. I was literally sitting there. I'm like, yes, yes. Yes, for everybody. Yeah. Like these are our thoughts. And you were saying it exactly how we talk about it with emotion, but also with the facts, you know? So it was great to watch. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah. I think, you know, definitely for me, after becoming a mom, holy smokes, like my tolerance for BS is like way down. And And I was like, you know, I have so much to do. Please just give me the answer now so I can start to plan. I have so much planning to do. And please don't later announce something where I have to like change everything all over again and restart. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
We see it, Dougie. Yeah. Yeah. We see it, hosting a mom podcast, but also social media. Like we hear all the moms talk about their experiences with COVID and we're just like, we feel you.
Yeah.
So we're all in it together though.
Yes. Thank you for the accurate representation of what motherhood looks like and how powerful we can be in doing other roles besides, you know, just caregiving.
Yeah.
We're important. So thank you. Sure.
Thanks to both of you. Thanks for reaching out. And I have to say, like, I always get tons and tons of requests to be on podcasts and things like that. And, you know, I'm not able to do all of them because, you know, there's only 24 hours and my kids need me and all of that. But obviously I said yes to you because, it's an issue that's close to my heart and I wanted to talk about it. But my gosh, you are so organized.
I'm going to cry. Thank you.
The way, you know, like when you reached out, like everything was done super, super professionally. And it was just, you know, I was like, of course, moms. But I was just really blown away. And I was like, hey, this is good. This is great. And I just really enjoyed our conversation. So thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. That means so much to us, really.
No, you put so much thought into even like the design, you know, you can really see the effort. It really stood out. So good work on that.
Thank you. Yeah, thank just you. Like you, we don't have time to mess around.
You're serious. Yeah.
That's so great. Thank you so much for saying yes to us and for having a conversation with us. We'd love to keep talking to you and we'll be watching you from afar and shouting your name from our rooftop. So
thank you so much for the love. I really, really appreciate it. And lots of love to both of you. And keep in touch.
Yes. That'd be lovely.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Bye. Enjoy your evening. Thank you again. Bye.
What a conversation. I mean, that is exactly why Boutella was voted Toronto's best MPP for 2 years in a row, 2019 and 20, by Now Magazine readers and Best Local Politician by Toronto Star readers. I understand why. I'm in agreeance.
Me too. And when she makes her speeches, it's literally like, I feel like she's one of our girlfriends and we're like, say this. And then she goes and she says it.
Yeah.
And owns it. So and
I never realized the lack of representation of mothers in Ontario before I started listening to her speeches. I also really think it's important to say that not needing to care about politics as a mother is a privilege. You know what I'm saying?
Mm, what do you mean by that?
It means that your health or safety, financial stability, and very existence does not depend on decisions by others, and that your life won't change drastically depending on who's in charge. It's a privilege to not worry about those things, you know, where I think across the globe, the majority of us can say that we do worry about the health and the safety and our financial stability. And those things are all very political.
Huge.
Right? So whoever your political party is, I think it's fair to say that we have to put the people in leadership who reflect our values and will ensure our children's future, whatever that means for you. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what party, just that statement alone is an important one.
I agree 100%. And with that, I have no regrets with the decision to have her on. If anything, I'm ecstatic. Also, what did you think of the drink?
Oh, it's actually, I was a little hesitant. I thought it would taste very earthy.
Mm-hmm. Not an earthy one.
Or like woody or just something very natural. But mine tasted like,
ooh, how bad.
No, like, you know, like wood bark and like mushroom. Like I thought that's what it would taste like. Mm-hmm.
That's what mine tastes like.
Does it? Mine tastes like candy. What the?
You always get the better flavor.
You chose.
Can we just swap for a sec?
Sure.
Yeah.
some bullshit.
You don't think it tastes like candy?
No. Taste mine now.
Why are you plucking your nose?
Oh.
Oh. Oh, God. So that's a no.
First of all, that smells like BO.
Does it?
It smells like BO to me. And then the taste tastes very familiar, but not in a good way.
Okay, tell me that there's something. Something.
Oh, it's lingering in my nose. It's
okay, but there's like literally. Okay, give it a break. Look, there's water, elderberry, natural reishi mushroom, natural birch.
So everything that I said that I wood mushroom
and natural flavors. Okay, what do you expect it to taste like? It's such a healthy drink.
Good. So you keep drinking yours and I'll keep drinking my candy juice.
And it really is making me feel relaxed. I mean, if you're trying to do something that's like not water and has a little bit of flavor and it has the mushrooms in it, mushrooms are very good for you.
This has me thinking. I want to know what our listeners think too. Do you think that we should be both rating and reviewing the same flavor? Because this is a little bit of a pitfall now, right?
Right. I think we should rate it. We both tasted each other. So I think that we should rate it based as a whole, like not on the flavor, but on, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we don't have like a faulty system here?
Right.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool. I'm going to rate mine.
No.
I'm going to rate ours. A 6.8.
Okay. I'm going to rate ours a 6.9.
Okay.
So that wraps up today's epi.
Yeah, and just like Butella had said in our previous conversation, just do it. Yes. We were so afraid to reach out, just thinking that she wouldn't want to participate in our podcast, and she did. And just like how she had mentioned, you know, should she enter into politics or should she get her PhD first to kind of tack that onto her resume? And the answer is don't wait.
Yeah.
You are your biggest barrier. Go ahead, do what you want to do, make the change, pursue your dreams. And what a powerful statement from a very powerful woman.
Until next week.
Love ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support our pod baby, please share it with others, post about it on social media, and leave us a rating and review.
To catch all the latest from us, you can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook at mammology_co. Let us know if you're listening by taking a screenshot and tagging us. We'd love to say hi.
Talk next week.